What's up, No Nation? It's the guys from Plant the Spear. I'm Jesse. That's Michael. And we've got some portal commits to catch up on, some CFP reactions to get to. And Michael, it's not all positive going on in Tallahassee right now. So we got to dissect that too. So we got a lot of catching up to do. We came to you guys last week with a show to kind of talk about what's been going on with the portal. And there's been a lot of activity since. So, man, just glad to be back with you guys. It's football in the air. We had playoff games on Thursday, Friday, mm-hmm. and NFL going on right now. So it's Saturday night when we're recording this. We normally record in the morning, so a little different vibe here, man. Just excited to get into this one with you and talk some football, man. It's not always the funnest talking purely Florida State, but you know how we do. We're going to talk about it one way or the other. So excited to be with you guys. Excited to be back with you, Michael, for another episode. And how are you, my friend?
Hey, I'm doing good, Jesse. Welcome in to PTS Therapy. This is where we come together and we lament, or we talk through just all the things that is Florida State football. And right now we just need a big group hug. So, you know, as you lean in with maybe a beverage, however you choose your beverages, just lean in and let us all just come together as we take this journey of Florida State football.
Yeah, it's Saturday night. I'm going to keep my beverage off the screen for this one. But, you know, hi, I'm Jesse. I'm a Florida State fan. Hi, Jesse. So, like, we're going through it together. But that's exactly what PTS is about, man. We're going to weather the storm together. But, man, it's not all bad news, right? I do like some of these commits that we're going to talk about here in a little bit. But let's just jump right in, man. So the first thing before we get into the show, because you guys know I have ADD. I can't ever remember to do these ad reads. I'm going to go ahead and get this out of the way right now. But, man, if you want some Florida State gear, if you're still, like, they might have to start putting Florida State branded paper bags in the store or something. I'm not really sure yet. But Alumni Hall is where you got to go to get your gear, man. They got elite stuff. Never going to let you down. Baseball season's coming up, thank goodness. Yeah. And they'll have baseball gear, too. And so make sure you check them out. 1415 Timber Lane Road in Tallahassee. Or shop online at alumnihall.com. Navigate over to the FSU section and make sure that while you're there, you use code SPEAR to save 10%. You can use that code online or in store at the register. Just tell them your guys from Plant the Spear sent you and they'll get you hooked up. So we appreciate you guys supporting those and for them supporting us. That is Alumni Hall FSU. Awesome FSU gear for the whole family. So, Michael, let's start talking about these commits. And you know what? Let's start with the side of the staff that is actually pulling their weight. Okay. Yeah. And that is the offense. And you know what, man? It's funny because, like, we had Alex Atkins and, like, we loved his recruiting. We hated his development. And, man, it feels like at least Herb Hand kind of stepped right in there and is the one that's actually pulling the weight on the offensive staff. So, I mean, he's doing some work and we've seen better development out of him too. So there's reason to be excited, you know, and like when we talk about these offensive line commits, we talked about this on the last show. Until he gives us a reason not to trust us, right now, if anyone on this coaching staff I trust, it's Herb Hand.
Absolutely.
Because of what he did with that offensive line. So first up on the commit list, jumping from last show where we talked about a lot of those guys, we did talk about the Bowling Green transfer on that one. And so we'll kind of talk about the whole group in a minute. But first up is offensive lineman Paul Bowling from Troy. 6'4", 315 pounds. He will be a true sophomore this year. He was a true freshman last year, started 12 games at Troy as a true freshman, and was a Pro Football Focus, or PFF, freshman All-American selection. I like this kid, man. Pretty equal grades when you look at it. 66.6 run blocking grade, 67.1 pass blocking grade. So there's not really a glaring weakness on either side there. Had a 63 grade versus Clemson and a 74.4 grade versus James Madison, which was a playoff team. And, you know, before when you know, we were waiting on the Rams-Panthers game to finish, because I wanted you to hopefully have some sports joy. Well, we were on the fence there for a minute.
We were on the fence for a second.
But while that game was going on, I had on my phone, I was like, well, let me just watch some tape on that. And I watched it, went back and watched about half of that Troy Clemson game. And I'll tell you what, man, he held his weight against Clemson. And so, like, and that's considering he was a true freshman too. You know, you give this guy, typically offensive linemen don't start as true freshmen. Right. And it's Troy, so maybe that's different. But you give him another year in the weightlifting program. You give him another year in the nutrition program. Another year with Herb Hand, or a year with Herb Hand, to develop his skill set. And, man, I really think this kid has a lot of high upside. You got experience coming in as a true freshman with multiple years left on the backside, right? Yeah. So you could probably get this kid at least 2 to 3 years if he turns out to be pretty good, if he turns out to develop well. So, man, this is a great take to me when I look at this kid and see what he did in that game against Clemson, a team that you're going to play. And also what I like about it is he did play center there at Troy. Now, you did take the Braden Joyner kid who was the starting center at Purdue, but he also played guard at Auburn where he was actually a little bit better. And so this gives you some options, right? You can kick Braden Joyner over to guard if you need to, but you also have two centers. So if something happens, you got guys, you got some cross-trained guys. And yeah. So, man, offensive lineman Paul Bowling from Troy, he's young, but I like the take, man. I watching this film, I think he's got a lot of high upside.
Yeah, I like him as two. He's coming in as an interior lineman, I'm assuming. So yeah. he'll be one of the guard replacements there. I like the fact that he was able to kind of hold himself very well against Clemson. I did see a little bit of that film as well, too. And again, like you said, to kick this off, like with Herb Hand, he has given us no reason to not trust. If he feels like this player is worth a scholarship and NIL recruitment to Florida State, then I'm gonna trust his assessment because he brought a ragtag group of offensive linemen in last year, and they were more than serviceable. They were above average as far as an offensive line cohesive group last year. You know, they could run the ball. They were one of the top run teams in the country. Even against Power 4 teams, they averaged, I think it was about 140 yards per game as a run team against Power 4 competition as well, too, which we know in 24, they couldn't average but less than that.
So, 4 yards. Yeah.
4 yards. So I'm going to trust Herb Hand with this guy. Obviously, we need to replace the guard position as well, too, and I'm curious to see how that kind of rolls along. I'm assuming that Sandman Thompson is going to take that center position. I'm assuming. That's my assumption. I know you how you feel about young, fresh, true freshman, or not true freshman, he'll be a redshirt freshman, you know, playing that center spot with how important it is. But I do think getting veterans alongside of him, including Paul Bowling, could be a tremendous help if they do go with Sandman.
Yeah, and Paul Bowling, he did play center there at Troy. But the thing is, you're looking at a true sophomore or a redshirt freshman. They're the same age. They were in the same class between Sandman. And so you're at least going to create good competition there. And honestly, you never know how long these guys are going to hang around. So if Sandman were to hit the portal after next year, you know, you're at least having that competitive depth in there, right? And you probably could slide him to guard if you needed to, but at least he's a guy that can snap. So again, it's having options on the interior. That's the big part there. Now, the next commit we're going to talk about here is tight end. I hope I'm saying this right. Desirio Riles out of Eastern Carolina, 6'3", 238, from Jacksonville, Florida originally. So returning to his home state. He is an older guy. I think he's just a true senior. You know, it's interesting, man. When you look back at what he did against at ECU last year, 28 receptions, 362 yards, and 2 touchdowns. He's got over 1,000 snaps of experience. And I've heard actually some pretty good things about this guy, right? Through the college huddle that we're a member of, that we represent Florida State in, it's a podcast partnership that we're in. We are able to ask people who cover ECU. We're able to ask people that cover the G5. And there's some pretty good feedback on this kid. Like, he's a pretty athletic guy. I mean, he's not the typical tight end that we see 6'7", you know, 280, something like that. But he's more – this is really a path that we've seen Florida State take. You know, when you go back to 2023 and all that, and the guys that Jaheim Bells and all that, the Randy Pittmans, that kind of smaller, thick body type, this is kind of where he fits. And so you kind of get that, you know, Gus Malzahn could probably line him up all over the H-back and things like that. You can use him for a lot of different things. It's not all perfect, okay? Let me at least say that. He did have over a 10% drop rate the past 2 years, so that, you know, that's a little concerning there. And I was like, okay, well, that's – it's not super bad or whatnot. But then I went back and looked, and I think Deuce's drop percentage was like 5%. A lot of our receivers around 5%. So that's pretty high. You need to clean that up. He did, though, what I do like, he did catch 6 passes on 8 targets for 49 yards against NC State to open the season last year. And so that's a team that you play, last year. And so when I look at Riles, man, he's a similar body type to Randy Pittman. And maybe I don't think he's as physical of a guy as Randy Pittman, like just likes to de-cleat people. But I think he's a more fluid, athletic tight end when you watch him on film. And I went back and watched about the first half of that NC State game. And, man, he's got a little athleticism to him, catching passes over the middle and things like that. So, you know, I'm not gonna paint sunshine and rainbows on everything, but I don't think he's a bad take. And the reason I say that is because you hemorrhaged tight ends this year, right? Yes, you lost Randy Pittman, you lost Marquise and Douglas, you lost Landon Thomas, you lost Amari Williams. You got to get somebody in that room. And really, right now, all you have is youth. All you have is young guys. And so Chase Lofton, you know, that's a guy that was showing some promise before he got hurt. Still needed to gain a little bit of weight there. And so really, when you look at that room, you just don't have a lot of experience. And so I think that's what Rouse brings as kind of the one-year guy, to bring him in to kind of be the steward of that room, the experienced guy in the room to lead the young guys. And I think he's good to go from day one for you. So, you know, again, the blocking grades weren't the best, which is what concerns me a little bit, because Florida State doesn't really have a big blocking tight end. But, you know, at the end of the day, man, Gus Malzahn doesn't use his tight ends a ton anyway. So I think really with what you are going to expect out of the position, I think Riles is only going to help contribute to what you need from the position. Again, I'm not going to say he's Jaheim Bell, but I don't think he's a bad take either, right? Because you needed some veteran experience in that tight end room.
Yeah, I think you did need some veteran experience in the tight end room. It was great that Landon Thomas did decide to come back. I feel like he should. Yeah, he decided to come back. Landon Thomas decided to come. Yeah, yeah.
I don't know why that slipped my mind.
No worries. And listen, Florida State has been sucked. Everybody's been leaving, so I understand.
The water boy left.
The water boy left. He's in the transfer portal, so I totally understand how you could make that. But yeah, Landon Thomas is coming back, and so I think, you know, between Landon Thomas and this kid here, you know, I think this is, you know, DeSirio, that's how I'm going to say his name. Yeah. I feel like you got, you know, two good options there. I think Landon Thomas is option number one. He needs to option number one. He's shown flashes of being a really good tight end, especially from the receiving side of the things. Yes, he could get a little bit better on the blocking part of that, but he has shown he could be a really dynamic weapon for you there. And I think this kid comes in as well, too. DeSirio can be that well, 6'3", 238. So, like you said, he's not going to be that big body like Biscuit, but he's going to be that H-back type where you can line him up in the backfield. He's coming out. He's running your kind of your dagger routes. He's running your up the middle seam stuff. He's getting stuff in the middle. He's running screen, you know, tight end screens for you. He is, if you use him and Landon correctly, you have, you could use the way you use Raheem Bell. Like Jaheim Bell. Like I love the way in 23, how they use Bell so well before he got hurt. Right.
Yeah.
Let's try that again. Now, I know it's Gus's offense and the tight end is not as featured as much and he gets lost, but you know, towards down the road there during the season, you saw how they started trying to incorporate Randy Pittman a lot more. You just had a terrible quarterback who wasn't accurate and just wanted to throw it up in the air and hope the heavens that the Angels caught it. So, you know, it seems, you know, just as a side note, Jesse, 2 years ago, we had a quarterback who loved to throw it to the bricks. Now we had a quarterback who just loves to throw it up and nowhere near a receiver at all. So hopefully this Ashton Daniels kid can do something different with that.
I know, right?
But I actually like this pickup there. We'll see how he develops under Chris Thompson.
Yeah, I agree. And gosh, again, I don't know how I let Landon Thomas slip my mind, but it's been a lot. But having him back is huge, right? I think those two can be a very serviceable 1-2 punch. And one thing we did talk about before the season when we kind of laid out Gus Malzahn's offense for everybody was one of the things we talked about was how at UCF, he really did start to use the tight ends a lot more. And so maybe he just needed a higher level tight end. Maybe Randy Pittman just didn't fit so much at FSU. I mean, you know, he had some big drops. He was still a good player for you.
So I
think it's a good addition to the room as a veteran presence, as a little bit of a switch knife guy, switch up from Landon Thomas. But Landon Thomas, obviously, as you said, rightfully so, should be your feature tight end in the room. And I am excited to see what Chase Lofton turns out to be when he's healthy as well. But now let's flip over to the defense real quick and talk about the one defensive line commit that you've gotten, which is clearly not enough, and that is Texas A&M edge transfer Ryland Kennedy. 6'3", 239, redshirt junior, appeared in 35 games in 3 years, 451 snaps to be exact, but only one start. And Michael, I'm torn on this one, right? 14 tackles last year, 14 tackles, 3.5 tackles for loss, 2 sacks as a package player. 20 tackles in 2024, 2 tackles for loss, 1.5 sacks. He played 63 more snaps in 24 than 25. He had 12 pressures in 24 and 14 pressures in 25. you know, he's pretty decent at creating pressure. He hasn't really been racking up the sack numbers. I think Mandrill this year had, what, like 6.5 sacks or something like that. So, you know, his run defense grades were below average. His pass rush grades were above average. You know, the new defensive ends coach, he likes him. So maybe he sees something in him that he can do, get out of him. He's got some good, when I read this kind of scouting on him, good speed and burst, not the best in the power department, the block shedding, being able to get off, shaking offensive linemen, not the greatest awareness. To me, just kind of reading what I, with the athleticism and the able to like do drop zone coverage and things like that, he almost sounds like he'd make a better fit at the jack position, like a bigger kind of linebacker, you know what I mean? Yep. That's kind of what he sounds more like he fits at. But in a way, to me, he kind of feels like a little bit more of like a James Williams type of gamble if you're going to make him a three-down starter, because I don't think that would be a good move. I just don't think he's shown the ability to be that guy. He's been at Texas A&M for 3 years. Now, I understand he did take off, I think, 3 years in high school of playing football, so he lost a lot of experience there. But, I mean, he played a senior year. He's been at Texas A&M for 3 years, still has not really found a way onto the field, still has not really been insanely productive. So I think if you could have him be in that pass rush specialist position, I think that's where he could shine. But, man, I still just, like, I don't know. I just don't. It's hard to find a whole lot of upside in a guy that had 3 years and didn't do a whole lot of production, right? Because you know how we are, man. We say from all the time, potential's great. Potential's what got you 2024. Production is even more valuable. Production's what got you 2023. And so again, like, you went and got Jared Verse from Albany, who had a ton of production. And then 24, you went and got someone like Marvin Jones Jr. from Georgia that didn't have a lot of production. Now you're taking a guy without a lot of production, with a big name by him, a big logo by his name, and you're hoping you can get something out of it. So, again, right, we'll see what the new edges coach can do with him. He's got a lot of athleticism and a lot of speed, so I do like that, because you needed some of that up front on this defensive line because you lacked a lot of that last year. But, you know, man, I'm okay with the take as long as he's not your three-down starter. I just don't think that's going to be a good move here.
Well, let me just start back with position. I agree with you. I think he'd be a great at that jack, that third linebacker position. And I just wonder if maybe that might be something they're thinking about. If they're thinking about, hey, let me slide him over to that jack position, because that jack position often will rush the edge, you know. Yeah. You know, they'll slide they'll take out that end position and put another tackle in and then rush that jack position if they, you know, kind of that 3-3 stack where they kind of slide one of those linebackers down to be the fourth rusher there. So that could be a potential there as well. I think, though, and I wholeheartedly agree with you, if you're bringing him in as an every down DE rusher, you are looking not a risk. This is guaranteed another James Williams situation, where you brought James Williams in, who was only a third down pass rusher specialist, and he turned out to be just that, but worse. Yeah. I mean, you rarely heard his name. And then towards the end of the season, he got a couple of sacks, but it wasn't anything big. And so, like, I just don't think when a player, what's the old quote? When someone shows you who they are, trust that, right? Mm-hmm. And for 3 years, this kid has shown us who he is. What makes you think he's going to be different? Let me say this. If he was going to like Indiana or Miami, okay, maybe. Maybe, yeah. I might believe he might be different, because the coaching there has shown they can help develop. But in this system, with these coaches, what have they shown you? James Williams was one of the, you know, yes, he was a third down pass specialist, but he was one of the known players in Nebraska. And then he came to Florida State and basically went MIA. So what tells you that this defensive coaching staff is going to take Kennedy and turn him into something that every time you're like, oh, you better make sure you account for him. Yeah. And so that's the thing I'm just worried about. This is not to dog the kid. I'm sure the kid's a great kid. You know, he's played his butt off and he just wants an opportunity. But I'm just saying, like, with where Florida State is right now and the inconsistency that it has been, why are we taking projects? This is a project. This is not a sure thing. And I thought we got away from the 2024 where we're taking, you know, D linemen that are projects and actually going after, but like people who've actually produced.
Right. Yeah. And I think part of that may be just where we're at to a degree, right? To a degree. Yep. And the problem is when you say you don't want him to be an every down starter, who you got beside
you? Who you got?
Right. We're going to talk about that later, but right now you don't really just don't have anybody. And that's the disappointing part. And that's not to say the kid can't make plays. No. That's not to say he hasn't created pressures and things like that. Like I wholeheartedly understand that, man. But again, I think you just go back to like you said, man, when they show you who they are, you got to trust that. And it's just, you know, I mean, 26 pressures in 2 years is not super stellar. Now, again, I understand he's not a starter, but you just kind of want to see maybe a little bit more production. Because again, like we talked about, man, we talked about this before, where back in 22 and 23, you saw guys that kind of had some proven stuff about it. Right. And so you were excited about that. And then you also come back and you're like, okay, well, 24, we took a lot of potential and it didn't work out, you know? And so you look at James Williams last year, I'm looking at his numbers now. So 249 total snaps and he had 23 pressures. And so he created more pressures than the other guy in. And so he had 249 snaps. And I know you're not supposed to do this live or while we're recording, but let me just see exactly how many snaps he had. When you're looking at the defense here, so he played 239. How about this? So in 2024, he played 239 snaps and had 12 pressures. Mm. James Williams played 249 snaps last year, had 23. And we thought James Williams was not good. Mm. So do with that information what you will.
Correct.
And so it is what it is, man. And so hopefully there's some more commits coming, but we're going to talk about that here in just a second. So, Michael, let's go back to the offensive side here for another trench commit, and that is Auburn/Virginia Tech offensive lineman Xavier Chaplin. There's a lot to love about this kid when you look at the paper, man. 6'7", 348 pounds, absolutely massive human being. 3 years at Virginia Tech, 1 year at Auburn, 37 career starts, 2,270 snaps of experience. Huge human being, lots of powerful experience. Can't ask for any better than that in that department. Now, this one I've heard a lot of mixed reviews, and so we're just going to shoot you straight here. He was pretty okay at Virginia Tech. I wouldn't say like super amazing, All-American level, All-ACC level, but he was very consistently decent for them, right? PFF grades, things like that. Everything looked good. He was actually one of the highly sought-after guys in the portal when he did transfer, and he just didn't have the best year at Auburn. Like, boy, I tell you what, I posted this graphic on social media, and let me tell you what, there were probably more Auburn fans commenting on it than Florida State fans about, okay. And they also, which we're going to talk about in a second, but they were like, I think this post just false started because there's some penalty concerns when we talk about Chaplin. Penalty issues are one of the biggest things with him, one of the biggest knocks on him. And you know, this is something that I've actually, what we've heard is that he has a hearing impairment. And now I believe that because when you look at it, here's kind of the weird thing, right? So last year he was credited per PFF. He was credited with 12 penalties. No Florida State offensive lineman last year had more than 5. And so that's almost 3 times the amount of penalties from one guy that all 5 Florida State offensive linemen had last year. But one thing that I did notice is 9 penalties were on the road and only 3 were at home. He had 5 games without a penalty, and 6 of those penalties were against Texas A&M and Oklahoma on the road. So, you know, he's probably not going to be playing, like the Alabama game might be a little bit of a problem because that's a big 100,000 seat stadium. You don't really have those kind of environments in the ACC to really too much worry about that. But the penalties are something that's going to have to get cleaned up. They're going to have to figure something out with that hearing impairment to get him on the same page. Now, I will say this. He only had 5 penalties in a similar snap count at Virginia Tech in 2023. Again, Virginia Tech is not playing in those big 100,000-seat stadiums either because they're in the SEC as well. So it does lead me to believe that it may be simply a noise issue, right? And I know a lot of the people commenting and stuff like that said that he just didn't have a good year on the field either, right? Actually, when I was reading about him in an Auburn article, he was one of Athlon Sports' biggest transfer portal disappointments of the year. And they almost, I think they were going to bench him at one point. But man, I think what you're looking at with Chaplin and what I'm looking at with Chaplin, right, is he is massive, he is experienced, and he has tremendous upside potential. If you can get the penalties out of him and you can kind of get back to what we saw at Virginia Tech. And here's the thing, man, he is almost a carbon copy of Michael Pettis, right? They're almost the identical size, kind of with the experience that they're bringing in. Michael Pettis had penalty problems at Ole Miss. Everyone said, oh, get ready to have three penalties a game or whatever with Michael Pettis. And Herb Hand really kind of cut down on the penalties. They helped him get a lot better. And so what my hope is that you see the upside potential with the size and the experience, and Herb Hand can kind of help him cut down on those penalties, can kind of help him clean a few things up, just like we saw with Michael Pettis. And then you get the most out of him. And I think if you can do that, he can be a very, very serviceable offensive tackle for you. But again, there's a little bit of a gamble side with this, with the hearing thing and the penalties and whatnot. But, you know, again, you're starting fresh up front. You need five offensive linemen. And right now you're kind of struggling for tackles, so you needed somebody. And, man, I think this is probably about as good option as you were going to get, pending the kind of the bugaboos that you got going on with them too. So hopefully they can figure that out. But again, I trust Herb Hand. I trust what we saw him do with Michael Pettis. This feels like Michael Pettis 2.0.
Yeah, and if the hearing impediment is a real thing there, and I trust that it is, then, you know, there are ways to mitigate that. I mean, I've seen it, you know, a lot of times when teams are on the road, they go through the silent count. That, you know, they'll tap the guard on either side, will tap the center, or they'll do the arm thing. And you could just, you know, I've seen it where I saw one school where they would put a hand on the tackle, and as soon as he took the hand off that tackle knew the ball has been snapped. And so you can find different ways to mitigate that. And maybe Auburn just didn't try hard enough, or
from what I understand, they didn't even find out about it until like midway through the season.
And so
that's what I heard.
Okay, and so, yeah, so you're going to have that happen. Here's the thing, though. He is your highest-rated transfer portal recruit right now. He has a 92.64 rating on 3, which is the on 3 combined. It takes rival, on 3, all those, and put it together. He's your highest-rated transfer right now. And so, again, Herb Hand really wanted this kid. From what I understand, they paid good money for this kid to get him out of the portal. So I imagine that, hint, hint, wink, wink, they had already been having this conversation prior to the portal season, because he was really sought after. And so I'm going to trust that Herb Hand is going to be able to bring those offensive penalties down, because obviously, you know, false starts, they kill drives. We saw that today with the Rams several times. And so, I believe that Herb Hand will be able to get this guy. If you can get him, I mean, he is a big body, 6'6", 312 pounds. I mean, at either tackle spot there, you're probably looking at somebody to solidify, you know, especially if you, with Ashton kind of being your, or at least projected QB1, you want to make sure you get that left tackle shored up, because he's a right-hand quarterback. And so I could definitely see Herb Hand really helping this kid take it to the next level.
Yeah, again, and 37 offensive starts and 6'7", 348. Mm-hmm. I'll take that all day long, right? I'll take that at all. And again, I do trust the offensive line. I trust Herb Hand. And so we'll see. You know, again, man, I mean, you're talking about what he did with Michael Pettis helping him. You know, he cut his penalties in half from the year before. I was just looking it up real quick, from Ole Miss. And so hopefully that's something that they can figure out.
Yeah.
But staying up front on the offensive line here, we have Stephen F. Austin, or Stone Cold Steve Austin University, as I like to say, offensive lineman. And Michael, I was going to make you say this name. I'm going to give his first name a shot. Okay. I am not even going to attempt the last name. But Stephen F. Austin, offensive line transfer, Chimdia.
Yes.
I don't know how to say his last name. So I'm just going to, I don't want to butcher it. So I'm just going to roll with that. He is of Nigerian descent, so you can go Google his name and figure out why I'm struggling here. But 6'5", 305, he's got 2 years left, redshirt junior, 14 starts there at Stephen F. Austin, 962 full total snaps. He did play some in 24 as well, 68.6 PFF grade, 81.4 pass blocking grade, which is excellent. Mm-hmm. Slightly below average on the run blocking grade, 57.5 there. Only allowed two pressures in 35 pass blocking snaps versus Houston, which was the only Power Four team that they played last year. Yeah. So did pretty solid against Houston. There was a lot of Power Four interest for this kid. And so it was good that Florida State was able to get him in and land him. A lot of people have been saying a lot of good things about this offensive lineman. So once again, you're talking about a true offensive tackle, which I like. And, you know, when we talked about before about the Nate Papps kid, the kid from Bowling Green that's transferring in, he did play guard and tackle. He split duty. And the thing was, like, I thought as an offensive tackle, I was a little bit worried about how he's going to perform against Power Four competition. And that could still be the same with this kid, sure, right? That's at least FBS. This is FCS now that we're talking about. But I think that at least gives you the opportunity to slide him inside the guard if you feel like that's where he's better at. Because tackle is this kid's natural position. And so, man, again, I'm hearing some good stuff, good pass blocking from your tackle here. You know, maybe you need to work on that run blocking a little bit, but Herb Hand, that's his specialty, is run blocking. And so, again, I trust him, and I think this is going to be probably one of your starters, man. And so I like the take.
Yeah, I do too. I've seen a lot of consternation about this take on Twitter, but I trust that this kid can improve his run. But I mean, let's be real. This offense is built that your worst run blocker looks really good just because of the way they block it up. The way they block it up, they
make it simple for the offensive line.
Very simple. They run a lot of zone schemes. They do a lot of tag teaming, you know, inside split zone. They run a lot of counter. So you got the guard, tackle, moving. And so wherever this kid's playing, I think that they'll be able to, if the deficiency of the run game does show up in his performance, I think they'll be able to mask it, or they'll go to somebody else. But I like this pick. I mean, this is what we always talk about. We want production over potential, right? Yeah. And yes, this kid only played one game against Power Four teams. But in the offensive line, and Jesse, you know more about offensive linemen than I do. In the offensive line, I mean, you either can play or you can't. Doesn't matter what level you're playing at. Now, you might be bigger or smaller, but still, you either can play or you can't. And this kid obviously has shown that he can play his 32 starts there, and I trust that Herb Hand will be able to get him up to speed for the Power Four level.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, again, he gives you another body, another option. And, you know, again, man, you just kind of, you needed some bodies because, again, you're talking about a team that lost all five starters, right? So you had to get some bodies in here. Now there is a little bit of concern for me. You know, again, you're talking about a center that's from Troy, whereas you took the best center in the ACC from Wake Forest last year and Luke Pettibon. So you had him, you had Micah Pettis, who was kind of a really proven SEC tackle versus one that kind of had a bad year in the SEC. So like, you're compiling some guys that are a little bit more lower level than what you had last year. But again, I trust Herb Hand to get things done, and you had to find some bodies here. That's the biggest thing more than anything. And Stephen F. Austin, I believe, was a FCS playoff team. And so at least it was because he started 14 games. So there you go. Yep. And so, man, that's good to see too. But let's flip on back to defense for two more guys that we got to talk about here. And first is Notre Dame defensive back transfer Carson Hobbs, 6'1", 190, spent 2 years at Notre Dame, played 191 snaps, only had one start. Pretty disappointing 48.4 PFF grade. He did make one start versus Texas A&M, allowed 6 receptions on 13 targets for 107 yards. Whew. Did not give up a touchdown, but he did get lucky. He got burnt on a wheel route, and the quarterback overthrew it. I went back and watched most of that game to see how he looked. Actually, I didn't have to watch most of the game because after about halfway through it, I was like,
"This is
I'm going to turn this off." They are looking at him for more of a safety role. They did say that. And look, man, I try to be as rosy as rose-colored glasses as I can, right? I don't like this take. I don't. I think what you have on the roster is better than this. Go put on that Texas A&M film, and you'll see what I'm talking about. He's just, from what I saw, and I could be wrong, I watched probably 30 plays, right, of him. And so maybe there's more to the story. He's not one that seeks contact. He's not like Earl Little Jr. where, you know, he seeks contact. He just doesn't wrap up, right? He forgets he's got arms when he tackles. It was just on multiple occasions where, like, he runs up to the pile and then kind of runs vertically with the pile. He doesn't get in there. There was one where, like, he could have ran over and blown up the Texas A&M receiver, and he didn't because for whatever reason, I don't know why, he just pulled up, and the guy ends up breaking the tackle and going for a touchdown. It was just – there were times where he's letting get guys behind him. He's getting space – giving up space underneath and giving up completions. I just – when you watch the film, man, I just don't like the take. I just don't think he's that good. Which is why probably, you know, last year at Notre Dame, he only had one start. And his PFF grade is 48.4. So I don't know, man. Maybe they see something in him that I don't. Maybe they can get something going on. But you've lost some DBs, right? We know that. Edwin Joseph, Earl Little, Shamar Arnaud is the latest. You've lost some guys. So you got to – you might need some bodies in that room. But, man, you just – like – I just don't love the take, right? Maybe it's more of a developmental depth piece for this year, and you can get some more out of him next year. But yeah, man, I just, I turned on the film and I look at the numbers, and I just, I don't really think this was a necessary take. I just don't.
Yeah. I'm wondering if he is just that, a depth piece. Like, they bring him in. Hey, you know, you're going to play, but you're not going to be the starter. You're not going to be dependent upon. Because we need to develop you into, you know, a consistent safety position player. You know, now he's listed as corner on three, so I'm curious about what Florida
they
State
said in his post interview or whatever that they're looking at him as a safety, which doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
Doesn't make a whole lot of sense. Yeah, exactly. Because for all of Earl Little's ills, the one thing you didn't have to worry about is that wherever the ball was, you were going to see Earl Little. He was going to stick his nose, you know, where they say, you know, where it shouldn't be. He was going to put his nose in the business. Now, once he put his nose in the business, he wasn't going to wipe his nose, but he would put his nose in the business with Earl Little. You didn't have to worry about just toughness and tackling. And with this kid, you do. You just worry about toughness. You know, if you don't want to get into the mess, into the tackling, into, man, you know, that safety position, that the way they play it in that 3-3-5, it's a it's a rover. I'm going to take your head off type of position. I'm going to come at you like a flying bullet, and I'm do everything I can to disassociate your body from the ball. I mean, that's the type of position that Earl Little played, and that's the type of position they might be looking at this kid. And if so, I worry that you're not getting that. Now, you might be putting him at the other safety position, which is like a true safety.
Yeah, cover safety.
You're just kind of cover safety. You know, you're going to be, you know, you're going to be kind of pulled down, and you're going to have to cover, you know, maybe the tight end coming out, maybe a slot receiver, something like that. Maybe that's what they're bringing him for. I'm going to be curious to see that. But, you know, I hadn't had a chance to watch the film on this kid yet, so I'm going to take your word for it. This makes me worry if you, Jesse, are worried about this.
Yeah, and again, man, like there were some times where he played mostly slot corner against Texas A&M, and there were times where they would rotate him back to safety a little bit here and there. But the one thing that, like, stood out to me when you watch him is he's easy to find on film. He is the guy that moves the most on the defense pre-snap and then does the least after
the snap. Does the least on the defense.
It's like that person who's like, let me help you move this. And they just dance around, but they never actually lift anything. Like, so, again, man, I don't know. Maybe they see something in him that I don't. I'm not saying he can't be good, but Notre Dame's a pretty darn good team at developing players, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, if I don't know. So I'm just going to give it – I'm just going to give you my honest opinion. Go turn on all the tape, and if I'm wrong, then correct me on it to anyone. But – let's stay with the defense for the second to last one that we have here today, Michael. And you know what, man? While we're kind of on the poo train, we'll just stay on it. So Florida State gets JUCO linebacker Chris Thomas. Now, there's a little bit of mixed feelings on this, right? Mm-hmm. I've heard, and I have not had a chance to go watch his tape because it's a little bit hard to maybe find the JUCO tape, and it happened right before we jumped on to record. I've actually heard some people say his tape is pretty nice. 6'3", 225. I like the size. He's got some pretty good size for a linebacker, but he played 2 years in JUCO college there. He is the number 8 JUCO linebacker, according to 247, 39 tackles, 8.5 tackles for loss, 2 sacks, 1 forced fumble last year for Northwest Mississippi Community College. He told in his post-commitment interview that they plan on using him most as a pass-rushing linebacker. The problem is, the reason I say this, I don't know what we're doing here, is he did tear his ACL in November and then had ACL repair surgery in December. So that means at a minimum, he's probably going to miss spring camp and most of summer. He may be ready for later in the fall. And the other thing to me is, so we took a linebacker, not only who has a torn ACL, but only produced 2 sacks in JUCO as a pass rushing linebacker. Man, if you're not producing a lot of stats from the pass rushing department at JUCO level, do you really think it's going to happen at the Power Four level? And I just am skeptical of that, especially knowing, you know, typically, at least with a JUCO guy, there's nothing wrong with JUCO, but their facilities, their strength and conditioning, their nutritional is nowhere near what Florida State is, whether you like Coach Storms or not. But now he's not even going to be able to get in the weight room and do all that stuff for the next probably 6 to 8 months, right? And so that is a tough one. Now, the thing that you could argue to a degree is he does have, what they're saying, 2 or 3 years left of availability. So I really, honestly, I think what you're doing here is you're bringing in a depth piece that you maybe have him ready by the fall. Maybe it's more of a scout team look. Maybe he's ready for 27, you know, if the staff is still here and stuff like that. So you have a little bit of runway to develop the kid. But again, man, you're talking about a not so productive linebacker at the JUCO level that tore his ACL. And it just seems like, what are we doing? Especially at a position where you're not very good at linebacker anyway. And we got more to talk about that in just a second with Omar Graham coming back and all that. But man, you needed to elevate this position. And so far, you just haven't done that. And this doesn't do that either.
No, let me read you a quote he gave 247. He said, long story short, I did tear my ACL playing JUCO ball. Ever since then, just been praying to God, wanting a college to give me a chance. By the grace of God, FSU gave me that one chance, and today I became a Noel. I committed, Thomas told 247. Noel's 247 after his visit. Thomas tore his ACL in November, got surgery in December, and is 3 weeks removed from that operation. Here's my thing. I'm so grateful that the Lord Jesus Christ allowed this guy to play football again. Let me just say that. And it seems like a great dude. Why are we taking a linebacker?
Why is it at Florida State?
From a JUCO level, who tore his ACL in November, when we are in desperate need of production. What are we doing? Like, we spent money on this?
Yeah.
Like,
there's a lot of linebackers in the portal.
There's a lot of, there's over 10,000 players in the portal right now. And this is what you found? Somebody that is a huge project who we don't know will be the same. And no, I'm not trying to down the kid. I'm sure he's going to come back and he's going to play his best, or try at least to play his best. But this is a, you know, when they talk about in the NFL and the pro sports is a contract year. This is a firing year for Mike Norvell. I mean, it should have been last year, but, you know, we can't rehash that anymore. This is a make it or break it, you lose your job year, Mike Norvell.
Yep.
Like, why are we bringing in this? Why are we taking such a huge risk with this kid when we desperately need linebacker help? Desperately need linebacking help. So we went and got a JUCO kid. Tell me how that makes sense. A hurt JUCO kid. Again, this just compounds. And make sure you guys hear me, Noel Nation, that let's separate the kid out, because I'm not trying to down the kid. It's not his fault. I am downing the decision. Why are we making this decision? I'm sure that kid could go somewhere and probably have a better timeline and develop into a really good player. But at Florida State, coming off of 7-17 over the last 2 years, we don't have time for that kid. We've got to win now. I just don't understand. This of all the decisions they've made, is the worst one by far.
I think so. And it's also kind of disappointing that this is Ernie's first, his first recruit or whatever.
This, like,
his
first signing. This is what you went and got, bro?
Right. Like, you chose to internally promote at the linebacker position instead of going to find somebody new. And then your first signee is a hurt JUCO kid. And again, like you said, man, it's nothing against the kid. I'm sure he's a great kid. I hope he turns out to be great. And I hope he has a great career at Florida State and goes on to play in the league. But it's just unlikely that that's going to happen. And so, like, man, with how much the linebacker position needed to be elevated, this just doesn't really do that. And so, it just goes to another questionable decision. But we're really struggling on the defensive side of the ball, which we're going to talk about after we talk about spend about a minute on the last commit. And that is an Aussie punter, Michael.
Yeah.
Daniel Hughes, which I love, okay, because we have good history with them. He transferred in from New Mexico State. And so there's not a whole lot to say about a punter, but I did pull some stats for you here. Averaged 43.1 net yards, 41 punts, 14 down inside the 20, had zero blocks. So sounds pretty good to me. We needed a punter, and so we got a punter, and he's an Aussie punter. He's got some – he's tatted all over, man. You know he's going to be good. That's all you can ask for. So let's – well, and you know what? We're going to have to find a kicker too, because Jake Weinberg entered the portal. He probably missed his paperwork when he went to go
file. Probably. He missed it. Why right?
It fell off the desk. He missed the portal trying to enter it. So I guess you're not too sad about that, but we're going to have to go get a kicker too. But let's flip to some other news here about more FSU-related stuff with the portal. And first off, the news we hinted at earlier is Omar Graham Jr. is returning, pulled his name out of the portal. This is now the second time that has happened for Omar Graham Jr. So coming back. So you know what, man? Again, you need some help at linebacker. And we weren't sad to see him go because we wanted to see you start fresh in the room. Yeah. But if the best you can do right now is an injured JUCO player, then Omar Graham Jr. is probably the best option you got between him and Blake. And hopefully Caleb LaValle can contribute this year. You still lost a few pieces out of there with Stephon Thompson and Juice Cryer, you know, and some guys like that. You've lost a couple of guys. So I'd still probably like to see them get someone. And what was really, really disappointing is I'm pretty sure the way this played out was because you were supposed to get Rasheem Biles on campus, the Pitt linebacker, which I might have kissed Mike if he'd have got this one. I mean, this would have been like one of the best commits you'd have got out of the portal. I mean, the kid was like the number two linebacker in the portal, insanely productive. I was so excited the fact that we might have got this kid. And then I heard it was something with some credit issues, not like his credit score. I mean, like credit transferring in. But then he's going to take a visit at Michigan. So some people are like, if they're transferred there, I don't know the deal. But he canceled the visit. And so after he cancels the visit, Omar Graham Jr. comes back. So I think it was kind of like, we're not going to get anybody, so let's go see if we can get him back. And so I think you kind of, you know, you just had to do what you had to do to get a body in the room, but it was really disappointing to have the hope of Rasheem Biles, who at the time had only visited Colorado and canceled every other visit, which again may have been for the credit issues, to think you might have had a chance at that, to then being like, okay, well, we got Omar Graham Jr. back. And that's no dish on Omar Graham Jr., but you had a really, really good linebacker on the fence maybe, and now you're just kind of taking back the ones that weren't very good last year. And so you're kind of in the same position, man, and it is what it is. And so, yeah, I mean, Omar Graham Jr.'s back. It's a body. It's experience. It's in this defense. That's good. You need him. But at the expense of Biles or whatever, or getting someone else, man, it's just another disappointment on the defensive side of the ball.
Yeah, what's that old saying, Jesse? Crazy is defined as
oh yeah, what's the definition of insanity? Doing the same thing over and over and expecting different results.
Different result, right? So we bring back Omar Graham, and again, like, I feel like we always have to caveat this, that we don't hate these players as people. They're good kids. It's crazy calling them kids, but they're good players. They're
young
good
men.
People.
Yeah.
They're young men. They're good young men, right? They're just trying to do the best they can with the situation they have. So this is no hate towards them as people, but we are judging them based on the production we have seen on the field. And it has been very clear. Omar's been here, what, 3 years now? And it's very clear, outside of a little glimpse towards the end of the 2-10 season last year, he has not been very good. And let me put it this way. He has been very bad, very bad. Missed tackles, misalignment, not reading right, run over, not in the right position, terrible coverage, slow reaction, molasses hips. I mean, just like, I could keep going. He is not good. Again, now, on the other side of it, I get it. You're not attracting any big name linebackers out of the portal. You know, you brought in a couple freshmen high school, but they're not probably going to be ready yet for you. You know, and maybe they're not as good as Omar Graham is, which is also a problem. And so you rather bring back what you know, right? The devil you know versus the devil you don't.
Yep, exactly.
So at least, you know, at least he'll know the play call. He can put himself in, or theoretically put himself in the right position to make a play. So I get that. And Jesse, you always say this, right? There's nothing against somebody getting better. Nothing against a team getting
it's
better.
It's not
right?
illegal to get
it's
better.
It's not illegal. So hopefully he will. I don't know.
Yeah. It's just retreading again, which stinks. And hopefully the Isaiah Williams kid as a freshman is just that dude and can get on the field. And that's really my hope. But Michael, you know what, man? As soon as you're feeling bad, guess what? It goes to worse.
It gets worse. That's what the life of
today, right? So we go to jump on to record, and no sooner do we go to jump on, my buddy Jeremy from Rock and Knoll. Make sure you check him out. I was just on a show the other day. He texted me that Kevin Wynn's going to the portal. And so, you know, I think it was two episodes ago, I had said, like, as long as you had X, Y, and Z coming back. Well, X is back. Y and Z are all leaving. Like, the DeSeers are leaving, more than likely leaving. Kevin Wynn's leaving now, probably. I mean, it's just a report right now. We haven't seen for sure. He's not in the actual portal.
Right.
But, man, if he leaves, what are we doing at the defensive line? Like, man, here's the thing. You got rid of Odell. And in fairness, we said it was time to move on.
Yes,
because
we did.
The recruiting had not been good. So then you bring in Pot Roast to rejuvenate the defensive line with a younger body in the position, a younger coach. And what are we doing? I mean, Michael, it feels like someone left the Pot Roast in the freezer, right? Because we are ice cold on the trail. You lose Kevin Wynn. And so, like, I went back and I looked it up just at Florida State's roster currently as it's listed on their website right now. And when you look at the defensive line, you have Deontay McCray and Daniel Lyons. If assuming the DeSeer twins do leave and Kevin Wynn leaves, buddy, you got two defensive tackles. And Deontay McCray is more of a hybrid guy, and Daniel Lyons is just okay. And so, like, you don't really have – actually, matter of fact, you only have three defensive linemen on the roster when you add in freshman Tylon Lee, who will be a redshirt freshman going into the next year. You've added one in the Kennedy kid from the portal who was, as we said, we don't think should be your full-time starter. Now, yes, you have about 18 freshmen coming in at the defensive line, but – how many, if any, of those do you expect to contribute in year one at a high level? The DeSeer twins, mostly what Mandrell did, is more the exception than the rule, right? That typically does not happen a whole lot. And so we've spent a lot of time this offseason talking about the one place you really, really need. You had to rebuild the offensive line, but the one area you really needed to fix was the defensive line, because it just wasn't good and it screwed everything else up. Your linebacker play was bad last year, right? Yep. We know that. But your defensive line, especially the edge positions, basically made no impact. Now, Darryl Jackson was a block eater. I understand that and how he works in this defense.
Right, right.
But, man, again, it's not illegal to bust a double team. I saw a lot of players do it against us.
Come on.
You just don't – like, right now, I think if I had to just look overall, I think my one biggest concern going into next year, other than a head coach, is the defensive line. You got nobody, and the ones you got aren't good. Now, let me take that back. I like Deontay McCray. I hope he stays. He's a hybrid guy who can play both positions for you. But if you lose the DeSeer twins and you lose Kevin Wynn, you know, I think Tylon Lee, again, he was a former five-star rated by On3. He was a huge flip from Ole Miss. I think he can be somebody, but he hasn't played a whole lot. And so who do you have on this defensive line that you're like – and I understand we're not a playoff team. Please hear me say that. I know where we're at. But you're watching these playoffs and you're like, look at Miami. Look at what they got on that defensive line. Why they're there. Look at that defensive line for Indiana, what they're doing and stuff like that. Who do you got that's like that? Ain't nobody on that defensive line like that. And so that's what's just so concerning. And then to see Kevin Wynn going to, because I was like, you know what, man? Maybe Kevin Wynn will be that dude. He only played 40 snaps last year. He was hurt most of the year. He can step into that role and be Darryl Jackson 2.0, right? And if he leaves and the DeSeer twins leave, you just ain't got anything left in the room. And you're not even – I think we had, a Texas State defensive lineman on it. Like, you're not bringing in high-level players. So, man, I don't know. Someone needs to thaw out the pot roast because right now we're performing more like some meatloaf.
Well, a couple of things really quick. First of all, Kevin Wynn, Juju Wynn, whatever you want to call him, he's a freshman. It's crazy that freshmen are coming on campus, maybe playing. How many snaps you said he played?
40 snaps.
Coming on campus, playing 40 snaps and being like, you know what? I only got this much round. I'm going to go maximize it somewhere else. I also think he's taking advantage of the fact that he knows that Florida State's hurting for D linemen, and yep. he's trying to up his pay, which, yep. again, you and I would do the same thing if we were in the same situation. So
sure
enough. I'm not blaming the kid, okay? You could talk about, you know, I know everybody, well, there's no more tradition. There's no more loyalty. Loyalty went out the door when we said, hey, these kids deserve to get paid, right? It's a yep. business now. So you would do the same thing if you were in that situation. So I'm not going to fault the kid. Where I am going to fault is Terrence Knighton. This yeah. dude, this coach has been an absolute train wreck. I'm not talking about the character of Terrence Knighton. I am talking about the coaching of Terrence Knighton. Instead of recruiting kids, instead of not letting your D lineman, your star freshman D lineman, get into the portal, you're out here tweeting back other people. You're yeah. out here tweeting people, you know,
arguing with fans and DMs, and
arguing
stuff.
Fans, getting in DMs and stuff. That's what you'd rather be doing and letting other schools come and poach your players. I mean, you're about to lose your the Twins, which one of them is really, really good. And one of them has the potential to be decent. And now you're losing Juju Wynn, who was one of your highest recruit coming in. And you yeah. want to like.
It's just embarrassing. It's embarrassing, it's infuriating. I think I said that wrong.
Yeah,
it pisses me off. That's yeah, the easiest way to say
terrible.
It.
Terrible. And that's the thing. It's like, and it's that old saying, Jesse, either you're coaching it or you're allowing it. And Mike Norvell has repeatedly allowed these coaches to slack off, to not be tough, to yep. not demand the most out of these kids, right? And this is why he's in this situation. You're like, how is this Mike Norvell's fault? He's the head coach.
Yeah.
When he sees these kids, he should be going to Terrence and being like, what is going on with your room right now? Like, if it were me, Jesse, I'm just being honest. Once this portal season is done, Terrence Knighton doesn't have a job at Florida State. This has been a train wreck for him in this yeah. year and a half of being here.
Yeah. And the thing is, like, you hate to give him credit or use him as an example, but Mario Cristobal does not accept this type of stuff from his staff.
Hire you in a heartbeat. Exactly.
And that's why they're about to play in a national championship game. It's just disappointing, man. And again, I'm sure Kevin Wynn is going to try, and they're going to try and negotiate. Mm-hmm. It's going to be a negotiating tactic because he knows you're desperate. Mm-hmm. He's seeing what they're doing with everybody else. The crazy thing is, he was probably already, you know, he's getting paid good, but he's probably mm-hmm. was going to get starter level money because he mm-hmm. was probably going to be your starter or 1A or 1B, you know, to the Daniel Lyons. But man, yeah. So it's just, It's another hit. It's another disappointment. And it's another one at a very, very crucial position that you don't really have anything behind him to back him up. And so right now with the defensive line that you got rolling into next year, we're in trouble. There is no other way to say it. We are in trouble if you do not start fixing this defensive line, because it has been an awful portal season. I mean, when you look at the portal season for the defense right now, so the offense, by all means, like,
it's done all right.
The quarterback is questionable, but you can see the fit in the system. He's a good runner. You're probably not gonna have a great pass game, but you know, when do you with Gus Malzahn? Everybody loves Deuce Danzy. You only really need two receivers in this offense. I think you're good there. I like what we're doing up front on the offensive line. You're landing bodies left and right. I think you're loaded at running back. You're pretty good at tight end. But then you flip over to the defense. You've signed one defensive lineman who was a backup at Texas A&M and in 3 years couldn't get a starter status. You signed a hurt JUCO kid at linebacker. And then the defensive back, you took a G5 transfer from South Alabama, who I think, you know, he could be okay. And then a DB from Notre Dame that was pretty bad there. And so it's like, it's just, man, what are we doing on the defensive side of the ball? It is, where's Tony White? Like, I haven't heard anything about him, from him, seen him since the end of the season. And it's so frustrating to know how, like, you've lost so much on the defensive side of the ball and you have not done a good job of replacing things.
Yeah. Now, Jesse, we have breaking news.
Uh-oh.
Yeah.
I'm nervous because it's been bad.
No, Florida State has landed a commitment from Illinois State, FCS national champion Illinois State.
Okay.
Defensive back transfer CJ Richard. This is according to 247. Richard took a visit to Tallahassee on Saturday, meeting with Norvell and coaching staff. So he joins, Carson Hobb and South Alabama transfer Nehemiah Chandler joining FSU. Now, just throw some stats for you guys. He redshirted in 2024. Then he emerged as a standout safety as a redshirt freshman for the Redbirds, Illinois State, in 2005. Posted 36 tackles, 1.5 tackles for loss, 2 interceptions during their playoff run. And then he has a 79.7 PFF grade, including a 69.6 mark against Oklahoma in week one.
Yeah.
So, now, hey.
You saved the day, Michael. Woo! I like, which is funny because actually, secretly, I was cheering for them to win the FCS National Championship.
I was too.
They were like the unranked team that just wiped everybody out. That's and I right. like to see it. So, yeah, I'm pulling up some numbers here, man. And, I mean, he had, you know, one or two games. That wasn't super great, but Oklahoma, yeah, great performance there. 69.6 against Oklahoma. You know, didn't give up really any passes, didn't have any missed tackles. I like that there. And then you're looking down the list, pretty much every game except for about 3 or 4 of them were above average on the PFF side. His tackling grade is 91.4, which is
I love that.
Superb. Love 76 coverage grade, 82.8 run defense grade.
Come on.
Thank goodness for saving my day, Michael, because I was already feeling kind of down. So that's, I mean, still the front seven is what's most important in this defense, right? And that's still a disappointment. But this is actually a really good get for Florida State. Again, how will it translate over to the Power Five level? We don't know yet. But, I mean, this is a kid that frankly, you needed at the safety position, right? Because I didn't think you were going to get a whole lot out of the Hobbs kid. And so I'll take it, right? Yes. It's a commit. It's a good commit. And you needed it. And so I'll take it.
Now, here's a real question about him. You think he can play D lineman?
Oh, so he can put his hand in the dirt. I mean, he has a pretty good run defense grade. And so he had three pressures and a sack, you know? I mean,
because at this rate, he's going to have to defend passing for 10 seconds because they ain't no, they're going to be standing back there just looking for open receivers.
Exactly. And so, you know, it's good, man. It's good to have actually something to be happy about on the defensive side of the ball because there just really hasn't been a whole lot. And, you know, the last thing I want to say here really about the defense is, it sucks because you missed on the edge from Bama, Noah Carter. He chose Georgia Tech over you.
Yep.
Of course, we talked about the Pitt linebacker canceled the visit.
That one.
And so it's just been kind of bad on that side. The Twins negotiation, the last we've heard is Florida State has made every offer in the world, and they just don't want the concessions to come with it. So basically they want to be able to go get paid highly and be able to move freely. And Florida State's sticking to their guns on that. And honestly, dude, with the drama that's going on, and I don't think – obviously, they don't either. They really want a lot of money or they just don't want to be here. Outside of what would be my biggest worry is that they're from Miami and they would probably go back to Miami if they did get into the portal and did go somewhere else. But, you know, we talked about it the other day, man. At some point, you just gotta let these kids walk. This has just gotten ridiculous. Now, granted, the problem is they know, you know, you got nothing behind them. So you really, really need them. And honestly, it's not a great year for defensive linemen in the portal, especially if you're not one of the top teams that's able to go out and pull anybody. So, man, I like the safety commit that you just got, but it's just been the defense is a big-time concern on what you've done in the portal so far.
Yeah, and I agree. Like, I mean, at some point, going back to the Twins, at some point, Florida State has bent over backwards and then bent east and west and north and south. They've tried everything with these kids, except for the fact that you have to have – this is where I actually agree with Florida State. Florida State has to protect itself with these kids. So you're not just going to let them – you know, you're not going to give them this big amount and then say, oh, yeah, your penalty for leaving is $10. So hopefully – so that they can just freely move around. No, the schools need to have some form of protection to be able to keep to have roster continuity. And which is why I will say this as a slight thing, and I know we could talk about this some other time, which is why it was huge for that Washington quarterback to come back to Washington.
Yep.
Because it proved that the buyout language has some teeth. And this is what's happening with the Desir twins. Now, I'm assuming that their agent believes that wherever they go, that they're going to be willing. Because what I've heard from every media member that covers FSU, that buyout figure for the Twins total is 7 figures.
High six figures.
So they better hope that there's a school out there that's willing to pay. Because if not, they're going to have to pay it. And they, right, you know, so that's what I'm saying. If they still want to get in the portal, they must have a guarantee somewhere that they're, that that's going to get covered. And at that point, FSU, you let them go. You say, all right, whatever.
Yep. That's, we did everything we could.
We did everything we could. And this is this thing where I don't blame Florida State on with the Twins is the negotiation. Where I do blame Florida State on is, why did they get there in the first place? Now, I know you were negotiating with them. You gave them a great offer that they accepted and said yes to. That's where I'm like, see, this is normally I am all for kids getting paid. But then things like this happen and the old cranky man of me comes out and says, well, yeah, dadgummit, what the heck is going on with these kids? You know?
Yeah. Well, and you know, the thing too is like you talk about the buy. I'm actually happy for Florida State. I'm proud of them for sticking to their guns because this has gotten ridiculous. You cannot let them. I know we're somewhat desperate. I get it. But you cannot let these kids just start running you over, right, or else it's going to create a situation where, I mean, we're kind of seeing it already. Everyone's going to try and run you over. But like you said, man, when you got, they signed off a 3-star money. Right. And so I don't think they probably, and they probably spent some of that. So I don't know that they had the money out of pocket to pay an almost 7-figure buyout. And the agent could pay it for them. The other school could pay it for them. But at that point, how much are they worth? Are they going to get enough money when, again, remember, you're pretty much going to take them as a package deal. So you have to buy two players instead of one. When you do that, after you pay the buyout, they're probably going to be making less than they would make at Florida State. So as long as Florida State sticks to their guns on that buyout, it's probably financially smarter for them to stay in Tallahassee. The problem is, I start wondering, if you force them to stay here, how much do they want to be here? And that's what worries me. But yeah, I mean, you got to stick to your guns at some point. You just have to. And it's just gotten ridiculous. I'm over the drama. You know what? Give them your final offer and then be like, man, just either take it or don't. This is what we got, and it's just not worth it. So the last thing I want to talk about here before we jump out of here, Michael, is the CFP. There's still some football going on, some games we got to see on Thursday and Friday. Of course, on Friday, it starts with the one that was the disappointment was Miami beating Ole Miss 31-27. I think all of us thought Miami was probably going to win that game, mostly because they were overmatched in the trenches. And it actually turned out to be a much better game than a lot of people thought it was. I thought it would be kind of close because I was like, well, a mobile quarterback can really negate some of that pass rush. And, of course, you have to say with Ole Miss, they were down some assistance. Yep. They're starting running back Kawan Lacy got hurt in that game and was spotty in duty there. So, like, they were down a little bit. Maybe had they had were 100%, maybe they win that game. But the thing is, that's just what Miami does. Like, Miami wants to win a rock fight. They're not blowing anybody out, really. They're just basically trying to do enough to win. We've seen that. They take their foot off the gas at the end of the game. They don't care if they win by 3. They don't need to win by 30. So they win that game. They advance to the national championship game. And that's why this feels like, Michael, we're just in college football hell right now because Florida State is not doing good. And inversely, at the same time, Miami's about to play for a national championship in their own stadium. And so it's disappointing, man. And the thing is, like, I've seen some people, and even some Florida State people, and I think you should probably check yourself if you've said this. Some people are like, oh, well, it's good for the conference. First off,
no.
This is Miami. Like, what are we doing? Buddy, I cheer for the Taliban before I cheer for Miami. But you're talking about... But the thing is, like, when you say it benefits the conference, right? Okay, from a perception standpoint, maybe, right? Yeah. They're already starting the comparisons of, well, they're like more the most like an SEC team. I mean, I don't know if that's a compliment or not, because the SEC's getting drugged in some bowls this year.
Exactly.
But the thing is, you cheering for them. What people don't understand is with the new rev share stuff with the ACC, they don't have to split any of this playoff money.
Nope.
So they have already pocketed $20 million. Plus, they're going to get $3 million in travel expenses for the national championship game to play in their own stadium. Yep. So they're going to pocket all that money. So the team that was already outspending you just made $23 million by being in the playoffs this year on top of their TV money.
Yep.
And this right here, the playoff money, they ain't got to share a dime with you.
Nope.
So this is the worst case scenario possible, is helping them get farther ahead. But, you know, the last thing I want to say on that Miami game, and I'll kick it back to you, is like, this is why I wanted Mike Norvell fired at the end of the Florida, or the Miami game, and why I didn't want to wait. Because I, for me, when I think of Florida State and the standard that Florida State is supposed to be held at, you're supposed to be competing with the Miamis. And I know Miami's been dormant for 20 years. I get that. But you're supposed to be competing with those, the Miamis, the Clemsons, the upper tier teams, not in a battle with Stanford and stuff like that. And so what I saw in the sitting in Doak Campbell Stadium watching that game was I saw a coach who was two years fewer into his tenure lap Florida State in your own stadium. And now you're seeing a program that I understand they're going to lose Bain, they're going to lose Mesidor, they're going to lose Carson Beck. They're going to lose a lot after this year. But they recruited so well that, like, as much as it pains me to say it, it is just seems like it's sustainable right now. It's because of the way they built the program. They have recruited well at the high school level. They have spent where it needs to be spent at important positions to supplement that.
Yep.
And they've also been quick to fire coaches when they didn't work. I think Mario's been there, 4 or 5 years, and he's had 4 or 5 different staffs. Yep. He will fire you quick if you're not getting the job done. So it's alarming to watch what's happening in South Florida right now because we have been lapped. And it feels like every year you're stuck with Mike, you're just going to be getting farther and farther behind. And I hope we can pull out of this nosedive. But, man, watching what Miami's doing right now, oh, man, it worries you because right now they're the rich are getting richer, and that's our direct comparison rival, man. And it hurts to watch. So let's go Indiana.
Yeah. Well, let me just say really quick about that Ole Miss-Miami game. First of all, it was third in goal when Carson Beck scored that game-winning touchdown. Yeah, it was second in goal, game-winning touchdown. Number 51, Xavien Harris, literally is sitting. And go back and watch the play. He's literally just sitting down. Like, he's just sitting down when Carson Beck scrambles and the DNs run wide instead of closing the gap. Like, you could have stopped him there and got him as a sack for a loss. I just thought that just some terrible defensive playing by Ole Miss there. But, yeah, Miami wanted to bludgeon you. They wanted to run the ball. They were going to do what they're going to do. And here's the indictment. You gave your indictment. Let me give my indictment. It's absolutely ridiculous that you had more than a 2-year head start on this coaching staff at Miami. You had lapped them. Jesse, you remember what happened the last time we were down in Coral Gables when Mike Norvell was there in 2022?
22, yeah. Well, 24 we went down there.
Well, and lost, 4-14 in 21, and then in 22 we BTA.
Yeah, how do you go from 45-3 to where our programs are at now? How does that even happen?
Like, how does that happen? Like, you literally
It's recruiting in NIL. That's how it happens.
But. Well, you literally had Miami in a chokehold. You had them almost tapping out to you. And you let this program, you let this coach, who is by far one of the worst in-game strategists I've ever seen in my entire life, lap you. Why? Because of two things, like you've already said. He's a relentless recruiter. And he has a philosophy that you and I, Jesse, have had ever since we became friends, which is inside out. You recruit the trenches first, everybody else second, right? He is relentless in the D-line and offensive line recruiting. And then number two, yes, they have money, okay? They got one guy they're depending upon to fund this roster every year, okay? But if you had competent coaching, it wouldn't have mattered if they had one guy. You should be two, almost 3 years ahead of where Mario is right now. And yet, they're the ones who will be playing in the national championship. They're the ones with the chance to double up your national championship. They're the ones who have been in the playoffs, in the 12-team playoffs, and you haven't, right? They're the ones who won a playoff game, and you haven't won one. You didn't win one in the 14. You got beat by Oregon because you couldn't stop fumbling the ball. But that's not Mike Norvell. That's another era. Like, they're the ones who has a Heisman Trophy winner in the recent history. Like, you're just you're the laughing stock of college football right now.
Who'd they have Heisman winner?
Cam Ward.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that. I try to forget about Miami as much as possible.
Exactly. Like, that's where you are right now. And so, hear me, PTS fans, No Nation. I said this to Jesse in the pre-show. I'm going to say it to you. We have got to stop lowering the standard. We've been blaming Mike Norvell and this coaching staff for lowering the standard, but it's been us. And here's why, because all we've been saying is, gosh, can we just get to a bowl game? Can we just get 8 wins? This was an 8-win roster. When has 8 wins ever been the standard at Florida State? When has getting to a bowl game ever been the standard at Florida State? We know what the standard is. The standard is 10 wins. The standard is conference championships. The standard now is playoff viability and being in the being there. The standard is having 5-star level recruits. The standard is having a quarterback in the Heisman conversation. That's the standard of Florida State. And so from this day forward, from right now, mark this, January 10th, at 9:24 p.m., probably 10:24 Eastern Standard Time, right? The standard is the standard. And if Mike Norvell does not get us to 10 wins in ACC championship competition and playoff competitiveness, he needs to be fired, point blank. If we win 8 games next year, he needs to be fired. This is year 7. We're done. We are holding every single coach, every single player to the standard. That's how the standard gets maintained. That's why when you look at Miami, and we made fun of them for 20 years when they would say, oh, the U is back. The U is back. You know what they didn't do? They didn't lower the standard every year. They kept the standard. And it took them 20 years, but they finally got where they want. We got to do the same.
Yeah. I do 100% agree with you about the standard should be where it is. It should have never slipped. I maybe a little bit disagree that it's on the fans because we can't coach the players. We can't fire the coaches, right? I think the admin and the coaching let the standard slip, and we have just had to the apathetic point that we are coping right now, right? And there's a lot of us who don't want to hear any of that. And there's a lot of who are like, no, it should always have been what it was. You shouldn't justify that with a bowl. I think we're just like, we understand that the poop show that we're in right now, you're hoping for where that is. That's not the standard. But again, like, how much of the standard is in control of the fans outside of like doing a hunger strike around Doak or something like that? That's the only thing I would say. But you're right. The standard should not be, it should not be allowed to slip, because once you start letting it slip, that's when it's every year you lose sight of it, right? Yeah. That's when you turn into the Nebraskas of the world, where it's like, let's just win a bowl or something like that. But, you know, again, like, how much of it can we control to say that we let it slip? I don't think fans let it slip. I just think we realize we are in a helpless situation as a fan base.
Well,
The people that pull their money and stuff, they've still shown you they don't care. They're still not going to fire them no matter what we want. So I agree with you. I would just say that, like, yes, we have to be more firm about that, but it's still out of our control, and it's a helpless feeling for fans, and it makes us sick to watch.
Yeah, let me correct myself real quick. What I'm not saying that it's our fault that they suck on the field. That's not what I'm saying.
We have to stop accepting it.
Yeah, we have to stop accepting it. It's our fault that we've accepted that. And what I mean by accepting is we still are buying season tickets. We still are showing up to the games. Now, I get it. I'm one of those fans. Jesse loves the saying, a bug to a bug zapper. I get it. Like, every year it gets around here and the season starts and I'm like, well, here I am, right? Buying tickets, buying merchandise, showing up. But at some point, we've got to say, this isn't the standard. And if this is not the standard, I am not giving my time, attention, and effort to this. That is not right. Now, Jesse, we have breaking news.
What's that? Mike Norvell's been fired?
Well, I wish. That'd be so nice. Wide receiver Javon Boggs is coming back to Florida State for the 2026 season.
Interesting.
Yeah, wow. Thought he was done.
I was going to say, I don't really know how to feel about that because he didn't really do a lot.
That's here, right.
But we've heard a lot of good stuff. I mean, we heard a lot of good stuff. So, yeah. I mean, I can only picture it as good news with Wheezy gone, with McCoy gone. So, you know, I mean, I would say it's good news, but, you know, we'll see. I mean,
we'll see.
You're probably only going to feature one or two anyway.
Exactly.
It's more talent in the room. So I'll at least take that. So that's good. But the last thing here, the other CFP game that we're going to talk about is Indiana blows out Oregon 56-22. Dude, I'm telling you, like, I have a coach crush on Kurt Cinetti. Like,
coach crush on
my goodness. That dude is an assassin, and it's just fun to watch. It is truly unbelievable. Like, people are accusing them of Michigan cheating, right? Michigan level cheating, right? Like they got a Connor Stallion somewhere on that staff because of how good they have been with what they have. And it's just purely amazing. Because when you watch that game, and I admit, I don't watch a lot of Indiana football, but I've watched basically every minute of their past two games. And it's unbelievable the turnaround that program has made. Because I looked it up last night. In the 30 years, they were one of the two losingest programs in the country in history. And the 30 years, 33 decades before Cignetti arrived, they had four winning seasons in 30 years. And they are 26-2 since he's arrived. And what's crazy about it is he's doing this currently with a 8% blue chip ratio. They have no 5-stars and I think 7 4-stars on that team. Now, granted, there's a lot of people, we were talking about this before the show, there's a lot of people that make the point of, well, it's a very older veteran team because their average age is 23. And I think I saw something about the average age of the Green Bay Packers is 25, which is kind of insane. But there's more to it than that. There's we were talking about this. Like, you look at this team that we had last year. Tommy was like a senior. We had a very veteran offensive line. We had a lot of veterans on this team and we sucked.
Yeah.
The same with 24. DJ was a veteran. The offensive line was veteran. We had a lot of veterans. And so, like, I don't know the average age of the teams, but, man, it's just elite-level coaching. And maybe they are cheating. Good for them. But when you watch them play, what's so impressive about it is they are, I mean, surgical in all three phases. Their special teams is buttoned up. Mm. Their offense and defense are buttoned up. It's just – and the effort level and – you know, you hear Fernando Mendoza talk about how it's an alignment from the top to the bottom, from the staff to the admin to the players. It's everybody pulling in the same direction and doing all that stuff. And, man, so, yeah, I mean, it's truly incredible to watch what they're doing. And, obviously, I'm going to be pulling for them in that game against Miami. And here's a fun fact for you, Michael, and I'll throw it back to you. Indiana, as we did say, is a 7.5-point favorite over Miami. Feels a little bit large.
A little high. I would maybe went
6. Yeah. I'd probably leave that there unless it was 6.5. But here, fun fact, interesting fact. So we know, right, Florida State, 2013 FSU has the season total largest. They outscored their opponents by the largest margin in history of the college football, right? Indiana is currently number 2 in largest victory margin behind 2013 FSU. So they are absolutely killing it. Now, they would have to beat Miami by 81 points to pass us. So here's what I hope, Michael.
Please,
I
hope I'll let you pass
they
us.
Win by 80, and then we stay number 1 and Miami loses by 80.
No.
Can you paint a better situation?
I will give up the record if they will beat Miami by 81 points.
If 80 and 81 doesn't make a difference to me. So I say, let us keep the record, beat them by 80, and then everybody's happy. Like, that would be, I would donate to their NIL fund if they did beat Miami by 80. But no, man, it's crazy. And the last thing, the last thing I'll say is, man, it's cool for college football to have the parity and everything that's happening because the talent's being spread out. But it is kind of interesting when you look at, like, the one common denominator in the playoffs once you remove the G5 teams is – this is really just a billionaire's playground, man.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, you're talking about Mark Cuban is now behind Indiana. You got Ruiz behind Miami. The guy from Texas Tech is a billionaire. Phil Knight at Nike behind Oregon. Like, it's just basically a battle of the billionaires.
Yeah.
It's insane what college football has become, man. Spanx lady.
Yeah.
Start making football uniforms or something. we'll wear those. Do something. Man, we need it. But it's interesting, man, and that's going to be a good game, I think. I think, you know, in the home stadium, Miami's going to have that little bit of an advantage. But, I mean, Indiana sold that stadium at 80%. They said last night, 80-20 split for Indiana fans. You know, Miami, I think when you talk about that game, like, we'll probably record again before then, but first off, tickets are starting at $3,000, which is absolutely insane.
It's crazy.
I say, in case we don't get a chance to talk about it again before the national championship game happens, man, I'm going to pick Indiana in this one. I think Miami's got a really good defense. I think that the trenches are going to make it really hard. I don't think you're going to see Indiana blow them out, but I think the way Miami plays football – with that kind of slow pace. I think I saw against Ole Miss, they were the first team in the CFP era to have 4 drives of 13 plays or more. I just don't think their offense is going to – I think they have a better defense, but I don't think their offense is going to be able to keep up with Indiana's offense. I think they're just a little bit more higher powered. So in case we don't get to talk about it again, I'll take the Hoosiers to win the national championship. That's who I'm cheering for. But man, give me some thoughts on Indiana. It's just, it's an unreal thing to watch. And it does show you how one, a coaching change can flip a program.
Well, coaching change in the billionaire. Let's make that. Let's
Amen get, to listen, that.
I have a coach crush on Kurt Cignetti. I would do short of selling my wife, kids, and giving my soul to the devil, I would do pretty much anything else to have
him. I got two kidneys, buddy. I'll put one of them on the black market.
I'll tell you what. There is some third world country out there that needs a kidney for sure. Yeah. Like, oh man, gosh, I love Kirk Cignetti. I just love his demeanor, his just like brash attitude. I mean, he literally had to go in and change the, not just the culture, but the mindset of Indiana football. And I lived in that state for 5 years. They all cared about just basketball, and that was it. The football was just kind of a thing to get them through to basketball season. And now look at them. They're just in a euphoric state right now. I have several friends who are big Indiana fans. I've seen them posting stuff. They're all traveling everywhere to every single playoff game because they're just, they don't know what else to do. They're so excited. And I'm excited for them. I mean, my gosh. You know, they always talk about how interceptions is a game of luck, but I always say that interceptions is a game of opportunity, skill, and luck. You have to have the skill to put yourself in the right opportunity to get lucky, right? And that first play of the game, that kid was in the right spot, had the skill to take advantage of that opportunity. And man, he took that baby and went straight home. And you just knew from that moment, I have a friend who's a big Oregon fan, and I just text him that a Denzel Washington meme like this, like, but it's over.
It's over. It'll be a long night, buddy. Strap in.
You better strap in. Now, as far as the national championship game, listen, man, Indiana's super good. Gosh dang it, they're good. They got a great D-line. They got a great offensive line. I love Fernando Mendoza. He's just they are just surgical in the way they go about every single aspect of the game, including on offense there. I love their receivers and everything. And I have to say, though, this Miami defense, that, what is it, Featherman? Is that his name, Corey?
Heatherman.
Gosh. Whew, that defense is something else. Yeah, they gave up 28 points, I believe, to Ole Miss. But, man, they're good. And I just worry that Indiana – might have just that national championship letdown. You got there, you're so excited, and then Miami gets off the bus and they just punch you in the mouth over and over and over and over again. So unfortunately, I am picking Miami to win this game.
How do I mute you?
How do?
So we're not going to hear from Michael the rest of the show because we don't need that negativity and nonsense. We don't need that. I'm just kidding. No, I understand it, man. Look, if they can stop Bane and Mezzador, they got a chance. And that's really hard to do.
That's my whole thing. If you can figure out a way to neutralize Bane and Mezzador, then Indiana will blow this sucker out. Yeah. But if you can't neutralize those two, I'm not going to say you don't have a chance. It's just going to be a long day. I'm serious, man. That is the best defensive line I've seen since some of the Georgia-Alabama lines under Saban, early Alabama lines, and probably Kirby's first national title. That defense was ridiculous. And every time I watch Miami play, besides the two games they lost, I mean, in these playoffs, I'm like, who is scoring against that? Now, yes, Ole Miss did score, so I granted that. And Indiana's the highest scoring team in the country right now. But I'm just saying, national championship, remember, now, you know, Auburn was stealing our signs. But, man, you know, they got out to a 24-3, 21-3 start, whatever. And people were tweeting out. And then we outscored them 31-10 after they stopped stealing our signs. I'm just saying, something about getting in that national championship game, sometimes fluky stuff happens. And so – and you don't want anything fluky with those two guys lining up across your offensive line. That's what just gives me a little bit of pause. And I would love to be wrong, Jesse. Trust me, I would love to be wrong, but I just think Miami might I think right now, as of right now, Miami is going to pull this out.
I'm just glad both of those guys are gone after this year. Oh. I'm mentally preparing myself to be let down because, again, we live in college football hell, and so that would be the cherry on the cake. But let's go Hoosiers, man. I hope so. So we'll see. We'll see, man. It's going to be – I think it's going to be a really good one. Mm-hmm. Either way, I think you got two pretty good teams right there playing in that one. So that's going to be it for today's episode, guys. We appreciate y'all tuning in with us and talking ball for a little minute here. I know it's not always fun to talk about things this offseason with Florida State, but look, we're rolling through it with you guys, the good, the bad, the ugly, any of that stuff. We're here for you guys through the whole thing. This is no fan therapy or whatever. And so if you're rocking with us, man, drop a like and subscribe on this video. We would greatly, greatly appreciate it. You know, you may not be subscribed and you think you are, so just double check that. Tell a friend, tell a neighbor, grab your friend's phone, hit subscribe on theirs. It would be great if we could get to 3,000. We'd greatly appreciate that. A rate and a review on the podcast also helps us reach other Noel fans. You guys are really good about spreading the word, so we really do appreciate that. And so, yeah, man, if you want to join the PTS tribe, $5 a month. You can join through YouTube. Just hit the join button where the subscribe button would be once you're subscribed. And it's $5 a month. Everything we get goes back into the show and helping grow PTS. We do tailgates during the season, all that type of stuff. So, man, we would greatly appreciate that. And again, thank you guys for tuning in. We will catch you on the next one. For better or for worse, Michael.
For better or for worse.
For better or for worse. Hey, I'd rather be 0-12 in Tallahassee than 12-0 in Coral Gables. And on that note, we will leave you there. Go Noles, baby.